I'm Helen Fees, and we're here today on Cybershow Reflections to discuss some great writings on cybersecurity, digital rights, and computer science. Today we're reading from Marcus Renum's Six Dumbest Ideas in Computer Security. In this part, we're covering part six and talking about action is better than inaction.
Dumb security idea number six.
Number six.
Action is better than inaction. IT executives seem to break down into two categories, the early adopters and those who pause and think. Over the course of my career, I've noticed that dramatically fewer of the early adopters build successful, secure, mission-critical systems. This is because they somehow believe that action is better than inaction. That is, if there's a new whiz-bang, it's better to install it right now than to wait. Think about it. Watch and see what happens to all of the other early adopters, and then deploy the technology once it's fully sorted out and has had its first generation of experienced users. I know one senior IT executive, one of the pause and thinkers, whose plan for doing a wireless rollout for their corporate network was wait 2 years and hire a guy who did a successful wireless deployment for a company larger than us. Not only will the technology be more sorted out by then, it will be much, much cheaper. Well, what an utterly brilliant strategy. There's an important corollary to the action is better than inaction dumb idea, and it is this. It is often easier not to do something dumb than it is to do something smart. Chinese philosopher Sun Tzu didn't really write that in The Art of War, but if you tell IT executives that he did, they'll take you much more seriously when you counsel a judicious, thoughtful approach to fielding some new whiz-bang. To many of my clients, I have been counseling that you should hold off on outsourcing your security for a year or two and then get recommendations and opinions from the bloody battered survivors, if there are any. You can see the action is better than inaction dumb idea all over the corporate networks, and it tends to correlate with senior IT managers that make their product purchasing decisions by reading Gartner research reports and product glossaries from vendors. If you find yourself in the chain of command of such a manager, I sincerely hope that you've enjoyed this article, because you're probably far better acquainted with dumbness than me. One extremely useful piece of management kung fu to remember is, if you find yourself up against an early adopter, you should rely on your peers. Several years ago, I had a client who was preparing to spend a ton of money on a technology without testing it operationally. I suggested, offhandedly, to the senior IT manager in charge that he should send one of his team to a relevant conference, where it was likely that someone with hands-on experience with the technology would be in attendance. I proposed that the manager have his employee put a message on the meet and greet bulletin board that read, "Do you have hands-on experience with XYZ from the PDQ.com? If so, I'm authorised to take you to dinner at the Ritz if you promise to give me the lowdown on the product off record." The IT manager later told me that a £200 dinner expense saved them over £400,000 worth of hellish technological trauma. It really is easier to not do something dumb than it is to do something smart. The trick is, when you avoid doing something dumb, to make sure your superiors know you navigated around a particularly nasty sandbar and that you get appropriate credit for being smart. Isn't that the ultimate expression of professional kung fu? To get credit for not doing anything. The article actually ends with a list of other things called minor dumps here, which I'm going to exclude from the rest of the talk, but they're kind of, if you like, repetitions or reincarnations of some of the earlier sort of major six dumb ideas. But, you know, they're definitely worth reading, and there's a kind of conclusion to the article as well, which we're going to skip over for brevity here.
You're listening to The Cyber Show.
So, action is better than inaction. I really do agree with Renham on this one. I think he makes a really good, substantial point about the early adopters versus the pause and thinkers. Now, I want to introduce a concept here called the Lindy effect, which is essentially an idea that suggests the future lifespan of something is often proportional to its current age. So in simpler terms, the longer something has existed or survived, the longer we can expect it to continue existing or surviving in the future. So, just as an example, let's consider a book. If a book had been around for 50 years, according to the Lindy effect, it is likely to be around for another 50 years. Now, on the other hand, if a book has only been around for 5 years, it may have only been expected to last another 5 years. And this concept can be applied to various things, such as technology, ideas, or even cultural practices. It suggests the longer something has been around, the more reliable and enduring it is likely to be. So in practical terms, the Lindy effect can influence decision making. If you're trying to choose between two technologies, for instance, and one has been around for a decade while the other is relatively new, the Lindy effect suggests that the older technology may be safer and a more stable choice, since it's already proven its longevity. Most engineers and quality control managers already know this as the bathtub curve, which is also a way of representing the failure rates of products over time. It kind of looks like the shape of a bathtub, hence the name. So imagine you have a new product, like a car or a computer. At the beginning, when it's brand new, the failure rate is relatively high. This is because there may be manufacturing defects or design flaws that just haven't been identified yet. And this is the first part of the bathtub curve. So as time goes on and the product gets used, the failure rate decreases. This is the bottom of the bathtub curve. Most of the initial issues have already been resolved and the product is working smoothly. However, after a certain amount of time, the failure rate starts to increase again. This is the last part of the bathtub curve. As the product gets older, components wear out, and the chances of failure increase. This is often referred to as the wear and tear phase. So, in simple terms then, the bathtub curve shows that when a product is new, it's more likely to have problems and fail frequently. Then, as it gets used and any initial issues are fixed, the failure rate decreases and stays relatively low for a while. But eventually, as the product ages, the failure rate starts to rise again due to natural wear and tear. So yeah, I think it's a really good security posture to let someone else do the guinea pig testing, and don't implement brand new equipment into production environments such as offices or organizational core network infrastructures, etc., etc. Now, there is a term for Renham's early adopters, which is neophile, and it's basically a term used to describe someone who loves or is enthusiastic about new things. It refers to a person who is always seeking out and embracing novelty, whether it's new technologies, trends, ideas, or experiences. Think of a neophile as someone who gets excited about the latest gadgets, fashion styles, or popular culture. They enjoy being at the forefront of innovation and trying out new things before others. So neophiles often have a curiosity and they're very open to change. They find joy in discovering fresh ideas and willing to take risks in order to experience something different. They thrive on the thrill of novelty and may actively seek out opportunities to engage with new and emerging trends. So yeah, I think you can kind of understand where I'm getting at here. Having that standpoint on constantly wanting to be innovating and using new technologies in a corporate or risky environment is of course incredibly dangerous. Now, I'm not disregarding change here. Technology is innovating every day and we have some incredible technology that wouldn't be here without innovation. However, blindly installing new applications, hardware or services that have not had the required testing to production environments is an incredibly dangerous security strategy. It certainly pays off to be the conscientious personality in the security environment here. There's plenty of stories out there where early adoption of new technologies has resulted in immense loss and damage to the consumers that have purchased them. One famous story that most people know about now is the Samsung Galaxy Note 7 disaster, where Samsung had to suspend the sales of the Galaxy Note 7 and recall all of the devices due to a manufacturing defect with the phone's batteries, which caused the units to generate excessive heat and combust. Some airports years later still had signs saying that the Galaxy Note 7 was banned from boarding aircraft for obvious reasons. There are some important questions I think you should ask yourself from this. How do you balance the desire to stay at the forefront of innovation with the need for cautious decision-making in your professional or personal life? Have you ever encountered situations where not taking action or deliberately avoiding certain technology implementations turned out to be a wise decision? What were the factors that influenced that choice? And can you recall any instances where being an early adopter of a technology or trend proved to be advantageous and yielded positive results? How did you navigate the uncertainties associated with the early adoption? Did you sandbox your environments or limit the new technologies to a smaller group of more experienced individuals first? Keep looking for new and amazing technologies, but just err on the side of caution where necessary. And just take the right steps to secure yourself or your organization's systems. So just to sum up into one piece of advice, just take the time to evaluate new technologies, learn from the experiences of others, and avoid rushing into implementation without proper consideration. Being patient and informed can lead to more successful outcomes and potentially save you from costly mistakes.
You're listening to The Cyber Show.
Okay, last one, number six, is action. Action is better than inaction, ? Well, I'll tell you, I really, really agree with Marcus Renoum on this one. In fact, I think this is possibly the best point that he makes in this piece. And I think it's actually the key point. It should have been number one. And in a sense, everything else falls underneath this. Breathless over-enthusiasm for the new. It's called neophilia. Right? It's a scourge. I mean, obviously, yeah, we want to drive progress, but we are very bad at understanding growth and its implications and the relation of growth to stability and so on. And obviously, it's driven by profit more than real progress, right? And along with that goes a colossal e-waste problem. You know, we're just chucking stuff into landfill sites at a ridiculous rate. Rare earth elements, all the, you know, toxic chemicals that are coming out of burning electronic waste. And if you really understand the environmental impact of this endless technological churn, it's utterly terrifying, sickening. But we keep on with it. Got to have a new iPhone every 18 months or whatever. So the problem is that for what Renoum puts forward, and I'll criticise his stance here, even though I like it, and I do this myself. The moral problem for me and for him is that as a Kantian moral prospect, it's not universalisable. So not everyone can sit back and wait for the early adopters to die horribly as a signpost for what minefields to avoid treading on. Someone has to scout ahead. So, yeah, I mean, obviously I realise there's a lot of humour in this piece, but the last sentence really did leave me wondering a bit about, you know, where he's at. Isn't the ultimate expression of professional kung fu to get credit for not doing anything? No, that's not me at all. Yeah. I lead from the front. I see a lot of cowardice in that last sentiment. That's not me. I find that... It's kind of paradoxical, but my caution, not being an early adopter, it is, to me, that is a form of leadership. Yeah, because it's the compliant mass blindly rushing forward. You know, you can be a leader by saying, hey, stop, don't go there, don't do that, that's crazy. So it might be a mistake to paint that caution as cowardice. But that said, I mean, the idea that we should all just massively slow down and drop the neurotic obsession with not being left behind, right? And having to compete. These two phrases you just see all the time. Not being left behind, and this, it has to be competitive. Stupid, dangerous, derelict philosophies right at the core of so much we're doing today, and especially in things like cybersecurity. Or maybe that's just the 20th century still in me. But there's a guy, you know, a guy called Adam Phillips, he said, and it was in a book about missing out, right? That maybe missing out's the best thing that could happen to you. Maybe, you know, missing out on that bullet that just went 2 inches past your head was the best missing out ever. Yeah, being left behind, well, you know, it was, some people were left behind when the trains went to Auschwitz. They didn't care about being left behind, they were pleased about that. So, you know, don't take these phrases, missing out or being left behind, as necessarily negative. And what Adam Phillips said in that context was, yeah, capitalism is for children. Capitalism is for children. And what he's saying there, I think, is, you know, this blind market dumbness. It's something that we just can't afford anymore if we want to, as a society and as a species, grow up. And that's not a rally to socialism or any other political ideology or anything like that whatsoever. But it's just that planning and cooperation are just more mature, grown-up ways of facing multiple existential crises. And I think that, more certainly, many people I know now, we see that cybersecurity as being one of those.
You're listening to The Cyber Show with Ed Navard, Helen Pease, and Andy Farnell. Tune in again next time. Thanks for listening.